some CALA members, including vulnerable populations, include the negotiations around existing programs and services to continue to start. Over time, as Kitsum Kalum builds wealth, they will be able to add in and build programs and services for both folks who live within the territory and outside the territory to try and create equity amongst all the people and a higher quality of life for Kitsum Kalum members. To do that, we have ensured that all those programs and services that are in place now will continue and be enhanced in certain areas. In addition to that, modern treaty nations that are already in existence are in a separate set of negotiations to increase the programs and services within their own nations. When those negotiations, as those negotiations are completed, we will be able to incorporate them into the Kitsum Kalum Treaty, where that will increase the amount for programs and services for Kitsum Kalum people over the next several years.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com.
Thank you to CICK in Smithers, BC for that, and also to the Local Journalism Initiative Program, which is helps support reports like that in communities around BC and across Canada.
This is Bird Note. A female northern cardinal plucks a black oil sunflower seed from a feeder. Just then, a cooper's hawk in a nearby tree dives at the cardinal. With little time to react, the cardinal has one last line of defense. As the hawk's talons close around her tail feathers, they shed and detach. The hawk flaps away with a bundle of feathers, and the cardinal hurries off to hide in a bush. This defensive tactic is called a fright molt, when a bird loses feathers due to sudden stress. This usually involves feathers near the tail or rump, where they're most likely to be attacked as they flee. It can be a saving grace when the bird is about to be caught, similar to a lizard dropping its tail. There's a downside to having your tail scared off. A tail helps the bird turn and balance in flight, but if dropping feathers lets the bird live to chirp another day, it's worth it. Fortunately, the cardinal can regrow her tail. Sometimes the first feathers to grow back are unpigmented and white until they're replaced by the next regular feather molt. It may not be high fashion, but it's better than ending up as a meal for a hawk. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
You're listening to Speak Up on CGSF 90.1 FM, coming to you from the top of Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University. And joining me here in the studio is Hannah Fraser from SFU's student newspaper, The Peak.
Hello.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You're here to tell us about what's in The Peak this week.
Yes.
What's the first thing you want to highlight in this week's edition?
Yeah, so the theme of this week's issue is Pride, and although Pride Month was last month, we've released Pride issues that are outside of Pride Month in the past.
And of course, a lot of Pride stuff in Vancouver happens
right.
In late July and beginning of August.
That's right, yeah. There's like Pride in Vancouver this weekend, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This first piece I'd like to feature is by myself. I'm a news writer at The Peak, of course, and the piece is called Burnaby Pride Festival, held on July 20 at Bonser Field. I write a little bit about the fun activities at the 7th annual Burnaby Pride Festival, which included live music, drag performances, and family-friendly activities and more. And while reading an article about Pride is much less fun than actually just going in person and experiencing it for yourself, I showcase Athena Fawn's perspective in this piece. She's the chair of Burnaby Pride, and she talks about why still celebrating Pride in 2024 is important to people, specifically in Burnaby.
Great. So your second story is about Palestinian Solidarity and Pride, which has been an issue that has created some controversy at other Pride events where Palestinian protesters have blocked Pride parades and stopped them. But your story is more about Palestinian solidarity with Pride. So tell us about your article.
Yeah, so my own article that I just explained was more just like Burnaby Pride, like why they still hold Pride in 2024, stuff like that, so more simple. But the second piece that I've chosen to feature is an opinions piece by our lovely editor-in-chief, Petra Chase. She discusses how Pride is sort of intersecting with the genocide of Palestinians currently. It's called Palestinian Solidarity Belongs at Pride. The first paragraph kind of reads, power-hungry entities like Scotiabank and TD Bank use empty slogans and rainbows to pretend they care about equality and liberation while they blatantly support Israel's brutality. Pride roots lie in resisting systems of oppression across borders and intersecting identities. Palestinian liberation has always been a queer issue. And what this means is that Pride is also a place to talk about Palestinian genocide. Like, this conversation should be welcome, and especially as many of the protesters of the genocide at Pride events nowadays are queer Palestinians, like, voices that need to be heard, they should be able to express these opinions. But, you know, as you mentioned, like, a lot of people have been saying, like, Pride is not a place to talk about this or something. So, I mean, we've been covering a lot about the genocide since last year, November. I myself wrote some pieces on this, like the protests this year at Spring Convocation, how they took over the Bellsburg Library before the Spring Convocation protests. But I think this piece is really interesting because it's sort of discussing what seems to be two distinct things, like Pride and the genocide, but they really intersect, and that's spelled out really well in this piece. So, yeah.
And of course, you know, the nature of Pride is that it, you know, people who are queer come from all different communities. You know, it's not like a group that's apart from others.
Definitely.
You know, queerness intersects with every other part of society because people who are queer are from all those sectors of society. So it really does become a meeting place for not just this issue, you know, the Palestinian, you know, the war in Gaza, but really, you know, all issues of oppression and justice.
Yeah, most definitely.
A little lighter for your third story.
Yeah. So this last piece I'd like to feature is called Imperfect Fits, Pride Edition. It's by our humor editor, C. Carr. She's a wonderful writer that's been with us for a long time. And as I mentioned, Vancouver Pride is being held at the end of this week from August 3 to 4, which is this Saturday and Sunday. And Ecart provides some inspiration for what you could wear to Pride. He says, you can make endless Pinterest boards until you develop the perfect Pride look, or you could just wrap yourself in a Pride flag and call it a day. One of the suggested looks is dressing up as a brick with reference to the first brick that might have been thrown at the Stonewall Rebellion in 1969. Of course, we're not really sure if like a brick was even thrown, but Ecart says this outfit is sure to be a crowd pleaser.
Excellent. So this is your last issue of the summer.
Yes.
So the Peak is taking a bit of a break, but you're coming back in the fall.
Yes.
And you'll be, and the Peak will be returning to print editions in addition to the online editions.
That's right, yes. So you can read our last issue for the summer semester online this week at the-peak.ca and view our full digital issue all at once at issuu.com/peaksfu. And as you mentioned, we'll be back early September with our print issues again as well.
Great. And how can someone get involved with the Peak? Maybe there's some, you know, kids out there who've just graduated from high school and they're starting at SFU in the fall and they're have an interest in this, or maybe they've been here a couple of years and are thinking, maybe I should, I've been thinking about this for a while, I should finally actually go and get involved with the Peak. How do they do that?
Yeah, so writing an article for the Peak is super easy, as all SFU students with a positive attitude to write and no experience are welcome. You can visit our website, the-peak.ca, and under the contribute tab at the top of the page. You can access more details on how to receive pitch emails, join pitch meetings, get paid at the end of semester as well. Editors will send out pitches or topics of their own for students to write on. But if you're dying to write about something specific for the peak that hasn't been pitched already, please feel free to pitch your own stories to us. And if you have any more questions, after looking under the Contribute tab, you can email promotions@the-peak.ca for more information.
Great. Do you have do you have training and supports available? Because I know a lot of people think, oh man, I can't do that. You know, mm-hmm. And often we experience that here at the radio station. People, I don't know.
Right, like just starting out, yeah.
But we offer supports, and to make it, we want to get people involved and make it as easy as possible them to be part of it. And I'm sure the peak is the same.
Yeah, it's the exact same. So once you start contributing, the editors help you out with the whole process, like how to write a headline, the deck, all of that sort of stuff. And yeah. For certain sections in the newspaper, like news, opinions, whatever section, we have a certain style guide for each section. So the editors can help you out with that and make it a really easy process to write for the first time.
Great. Yeah. And once more, how do people find the Peak online?
All right. So you can find our last issue for the summer semester online this week at the-peak.ca and view our full digital issue all at once at issuu.com/peaksfu.
Great. Thank you for coming, Hannah. The Peak is taking a break for the month of August.
Yes.
But the Peak will be back, and you'll be back as well, Hannah, in September to tell us about what the Peak's up to.
That's right. See you soon.
See you soon. Have a good summer.
You too.
All right. Thank you to the Peak, Hannah and the Peak, for that. We have a quick message here, and then we'll be back with Peter and his talk for the week.
Yes.
I'm DJ Coco.
And I'm DJ Star.
Come join us for Slumber Party, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
You'll hear female artists, oversharing, and research on health, psychology, and identity.
Hope to see you there.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Peter R.H. So you've been...
What I saw by accident, I see a lot of YouTube things by accident.
Just by accident?
Because...
You're just like walking past your tablet and it starts...
what it is that you look at one thing, then they over to the side.
Yeah,
they
have things.
So this is a half hour. It's why Western designs fail in developing countries. And they give four examples of projects that have failed. And actually it finishes with one that actually succeeded. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna bring that up to be a bit positive, because what it is, it was often in developing countries you have sort of a kind of a town, and even when it's the daytime, you don't have all that much light. Mm-hmm. So what they did, it was sort of took me a while to comprehend what it was. You take an ordinary plastic pop or water thing. And you fill it with distilled water and bleach, and you put it on top, and this collects the sunlight to come in, and it acts as a type of a light bulb. And the other thing is that for during the night, they have like a small solar panel has worked with it. And this actually, but the report ends with this, but it's sort of interesting that it's simple, it's... you can get a hold of the plastic bottles easier, and it's bleach, and it's distilled water. I don't know what importance that was, but they did mention that. Yeah. So that was something that actually worked. Now, the other one thing, if you look at the video, they'll say, well, it shows their sort of arrogance and so on. One thing I was thinking of, it kind of... maybe it didn't. The last one I'm going to mention, it maybe kind of did. There were certain elements of it. But I think it leads to the problem in doing development. You don't know what's going to work, and you got to do it carefully. You got to have it more you got to be understanding what the situation is and take into account what has not worked. Now, one thing that one of the ones is about this. You've seen this on playgrounds. It's like a but you go round and round like
a carousel.
That's right. So they came up with this idea to do a water pump as a carousel. The idea was that the kids would play on the carousel and pump the water.
Right.
Now, what was interesting about this was this cost four times as much as an ordinary water pump, which so it's $14,000 each.
Mm-hmm.
And it ordinary pump would have cost approximately $3,500. Now, this for the funding for this, it got on board with he was no longer president. It was Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if she was first lady at the time, Laura Bush. Kind of, you know, I guess they were trying to prove they could get together or whatever. But what had happened to this was that they said, well, the kids kind of sometimes got tired of playing with it. And the adults would have to do it in a sort of a not a very distinct or dignified style.
Right.
You know, and the other thing was that it tended to break down more. So mm-hmm. here's something, it sort of has an idea, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's just something, I don't know if it was so much arrogance, was just trying to do some new approach, didn't work. The other one was to do a child incubator. This is if you have a premature child.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to use car parts. Now, the idea about this, it's a valid idea. And the reason they said it didn't work was sort of interesting, was this makes it easier to find parts for it since it's from car parts. It's
right.
easier to find car parts than other things.
Yeah.
But what they said... and maybe this would work if you just have to get maybe people more on board with it. But they kind of said, well, we don't want to have in our hospital, even though we're a developing country, this thing that's made from car parts. And so there was sort of a resistance to it. One thing that happened that was sort of successful, supposedly, was to do sort of a blue light thing that was sort of a low... cost thing. It was just you have the premature child in sort of a blue light, and that worked a bit better. But and so now the third one was they gave here's an example where you say you got to be careful, you got to learn from mistakes. They were giving mosquito nets to people for their tents because there's mosquitoes and this it's malaria, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now what had happened was a lot of them were using them as fishing nets, and the problem was twofold. One was that you have a bit of a pesticide on it, and that's not good for the water and so on.
Right.
The other one was that it was sort of too. Small of a thing, so it was sort of wreaking havoc.
The net was too fine.
Yeah, well, you know, I had a yeah, I guess so.
The mesh,
yeah. And so that was the echo streams, and I guess they were getting the pesticide in the water too. There you go. I mean, it's not something that is really like they were outrageously stupid for doing it. They also mentioned.
No, I can totally see how you would think. Oh, we just. You know,
yeah.
Mosquito nets will, you know, keep people from getting bit and infected while they're sleeping and stuff. And perfect, simple solution, easy to use. But, of course, you know, they don't realize that there's another need that the recipients feel perhaps
right.
is higher, more urgent, which is, you know, an ability to fish. You know?
Well,
it's kind of an unexpected.
Well, they were saying that it was $50. Which was a lot of money for in some cases
yeah.
for it. So the other one, I think this was the one. I think there was at some when I saw it, some of the developers were a bit arrogant about it. No, this was 2006. It was to give in African countries children sort of a laptop. Now I have my tablet here. We don't got a visualness for this, but I got a tablet here
yeah.
that I utilize for information and so on here. But this was interesting, and I'm going to bring up Kofi Annan a bit after...
Former Secretary General.
Yes, he was 1997 to 2006. Right. And this was one of the last things. It wasn't a major thing that he... I mean, I don't think it was that, like, it lost a lot of money, it wreaked havoc. But it was just a program that sort of didn't work out. So... What they had this thing for children. It was sort of a laptop, maybe my kind of more of a we're 18 years prior to now. So I have a sort of a tablet, but it just was breaking down. No, originally they had a crank. You crank it for 3 minutes, you get 40 minutes of thing, and that didn't work out, and then they had to get power sources. It was a matter of it was a variety of things, and in fact one of the major problems was that this is the only of the four I think this is where the arrogance came in. They had this idea like, well, children, you don't need to tell them anything, they'll just have it and they'll just pick up on it. Well, that wasn't the case with it, and it was breaking in a way that they had it like you had it collapse in a certain way, and they would throw it and it was still working, but then they were breaking in another fashion. So
yeah, I can see how that would be. I mean, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, they're delicate devices, and you know,
it was also 18 years prior to now too.
Yeah,
so
all right, well, we're just about running out of time here, so we can finish the last segment.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
International aid is a complicated subject. We should
return to it
again
sometime. I forgot about the garden. I forgot our gardening segment. I was thinking we had too much time. It's okay.
No. It's all right. All right. Thanks for that, Peter. Do you know? Well, we'll come back to it after. Here is Gardening with Embark. It is time for Gardening with Embark with Pablo Vimas. Thanks for joining me today, Pablo.
Thank you for having me.
It's the middle of the summer. We're up to week 30 now.
Correct. Yes. Six more weeks and we'll be back at the school.
Yes.
In school year. So.
I have, in fact, already started to see back to school ads.
Oh, yep.
So, it's always busy in the garden, and we have some things we need to be focusing on.
Correct, yeah.
This week.
So this week, we might notice that all our zucchinis, squashes, and cucumbers, they are in flower. Beautiful yellow flowers.
It seems to be a theme when the plants start, the various plants start to flower, there's often, that's a signal you need to do something.
Correct, yeah. Yeah. So last week we talked about the corn, and this week is the squash. So at the moment there are lots of pollinators around out there, and particularly bumblebees, which move the pollen from the male flowers to the female flowers. So all the squashes have two flowers, one male and one female, and the pollen needs to move from one flower to the other.
Yeah.
And so that we rely on pollinators. But if you want to be certainly that you are going to have a nice fruit, you can do it manually. So with just a bit of cotton bud or with a painting brush, you can touch the male flower and transfer the pollen to the female flower. So manually pollinated,
And how do you tell the difference between the male and female flowers?
Oh.
So you know what you're doing.
Oh, yes. So the organs are quite differently, the sexual organs of the flower. But the easy way to identify the flower is a male or female is the male flower has a long, thin stem. The female flower has already a little bulge underneath the flower.
Right.
So the little cucumber or the little squash or the little zucchini is already there.
Right.
So that's the difference between the two flowers.
All right. So, and then you take your bud and just sort of move things over.
Correct. Yes. And then the next thing that we need to keep in account is the fruit needs to grow. Therefore, watering is rather important. And sometimes we have a nice size, let's say a 5-6 centimeters zucchini.
Yeah.
And where the flower is at the tip of the fruit, you start seeing that it turns yellow, mm-hmm. and start dying down. Start dying, turn yellow, and it looks like it's going to rotting. And that is a physiological way that the plant is telling us I need calcium.
Okay.
So it happens that our soil is too acid, so we need to add lime. So that's constantly we have to keep an eye on our zucchinis and squashes to see what happened. And so if that is happening, add lime immediately.
Right. And that's something you can pick up at the garden store?
Correct. You can pick up at the garden store and sprinkle around your plant, do a good watering so the lime can seep into the soil.
Great. And we have some other other plants that are coming ready as well.
Yes. So
ready to harvest?
Well, those are the wildflowers we will call the lupinus.
Yeah.
They were nice flowering 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
They make tall, beautiful blue flowers.
Yep.
And after that, they create a nice pot full mm-hmm. of seeds, just like a pot similar like the beans.
Mm-hmm.
And now those pots have turned black.
Right.
And so which means that they are ready for harvesting and collect the seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Once we collect the seeds, we clean, and we save for the next year so we can have more lupino seeds for the next year. Yeah.
Nice. And this week we've cooled down a little bit, but the watering is still super important.
Yes. Yes. The watering is super important, as mentioned before. Twice a week,
mm-hmm.
Usually before the weekend, so we don't are worrying about that.
Yeah.
Our plants are no water over the weekend. Even though the temperature has dropped, still we need to keep the watering up. Now, sometimes there is this belief that I'm not growing anything in this plot. The plot is empty, it's in fallow, yeah. Nothing is growing, and is they believe I don't need to water.
Right.
Well, that is not right, because we have bacteria, virus, fungi, and invertebrates living in the soil.
Right.
All of them depending on water. So just the fact that we don't have plants, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't water. We need to continue watering even if there is no plants, because we have all this soil life going in there, and we want to keep it going.
And all those organisms are important to the soil health.
To the soil health, yes, because they will decompose the organic matter, they will decompose the soil, and release nutrients for the plants. So, yeah, it's very important to keep it moist, yeah.
Excellent. Often people end up with a lot of... you know, when they're growing their zucchinis and similar plants, what do you do when you get it too big of a harvest?
Yes, so let's say everybody has this experience with zucchinis. We plant 4 or 5 plants of zucchinis, and suddenly each plant produces 20 zucchinis, and then we are in a pickle. What to do with that?
Yep.
So we can preserve the zucchini, mm-hmm. so we can make dehydrate.
Yep.
Make into zucchini chips,
yep.
Or you can dehydrate and make into powder, mm-hmm. that later you can be used for making some bread.
Yep.
Making bread or zucchini bread is another thing. Eating fresh as a soodles,
mm-hmm.
so thin strips of,
yep.
And pickling and mm-hmm. But here in SFU, when we have lots of zucchinis, we put pop-up market,
yeah.
And we distribute to the SFU community to share our harvest. So, as you may know, Embark Sustainability hosts the food rescue program
mm-hmm.
every Thursday between 2 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And as well, through that table, we share our produce that is available in the gardening.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. We're looking out for our zucchinis. And our
lupines, yes,
and wildflowers, and looking up for the general health of our garden with watering and caring attention.
That's right. Yes.
All right. Thanks. How do people find out more about Embark?
So Embark Sustainability, a nonprofit organization directed by SFU students. You can find us in our website, embarksustainability.org, or through our social media channels, hashtag Embark. and back sustain.
Yeah. Excellent. Thanks so much for joining me today, Pablo. We'll talk to you again next week.
See you then.
And that's our program for today. You've been listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. How do people find that video you were talking about?
Why Western designs fail in developing countries. Just go to
search for it on YouTube and it'll come up.
Yeah, it's a YouTube posting.